Hi there. Welcome to the Agency Toolkit Podcast, a podcast where we discuss stories, strategies, and techniques to help you build a successful and profitable digital marketing agency. Our episodes contain inspiring conversations with CEOs and entrepreneurs and leave you with actionable tips, ideas, and strategies you can implement into your business today. We are happy to have you with us. So grab a cup of coffee, sit back, and get inspired.
Hey, Julia here. If you'd like to grow your agency with a new free traffic source, we've put together a free resource for you called the Agency Traffic Blueprint, which outlines how you can acquire free organic traffic for your agency's website using Powered by Marketing. You can get that at getrubyrobin.com/blueprint or check the description of this episode for the link.
Hello, and thank you for tuning into another episode of the Agency Toolkit. I'm your host, Julia McLaughlin. My guest today is Josiah Lorsung of Odin Marketing House. Josiah has 13 years of digital and traditional advertising under his belt and focuses on serving small to medium-sized organizations. Today, we're going to be discussing Josiah's journey of building his agency and what he's learned along the way. So thank you so much for joining us today, Josiah.
Absolutely. Glad to be here.
So to get started, let's dive into a couple questions so our listeners can get to know you a little bit.
Absolutely.
So what would you say really motivates or inspires you as an entrepreneur?
Other than money, I think I think a lot of people want to say altruistic things. It's money is definitely a big one for most of us, right?
Of course.
I came from a we struggled periodically off and on as when I was a child, and you know, wanting to provide that for my family and myself, that's a big motivator. But
yes,
my dad was an entrepreneur himself. He had his own business and, you know, I saw his struggles. But I think the thing that I've found, you know, someone once said this to me, that I'm always pushing oars. I'm always trying to, you know, my company has the Viking themes. So he was trying to do a tongue-in-cheek thing. But it's true. I'm always trying to find that next adventure. I'm always trying to move forward. And it may, you know, once you reach that financial goal, which I think many beginning entrepreneurs dream of, you get to the next question of what next? You
know? Yes.
And yeah. Do you stagnate? Do you just like this? I'm content. This is what I am. This is what I'm going to be. Or do you decide, hey, time to on to the next adventure, you know?
Yeah.
So
yeah,
of course.
I think as an entrepreneur, you know, you reach that goal and then you're just naturally, you know, you're like, all right, what's the next challenge that I got to start working towards? Mm-hmm. So yeah.
And it's the, I think that's the thing that will identify, like, a lot of people have these ambitions of making these million and billion dollar companies. And then you start realizing for the, you know, once you get to the, you know, $100K a year range, you start realizing, oh, like that's your, you know, take home. You start getting to the point of like, oh, this, I'm actually pretty satisfied for the most part, you know, there are people who are insatiable and, you know, those are the true, I think, entrepreneurs who really continue pushing past that point. And it stops becoming about money and becomes more about excitement and adventure.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's a really good point. And then, so how did you originally get into digital marketing?
Oh, okay. So marketing as a whole. So I originally was in school to be a humanities professor, and I was super excited. I still love the subject to this day. I have a lot of historical themes within my own marketing agency. Mm-hmm. I started doing the calculations in math on student loan debt as a professor and income. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, this is a love profession, not a you're going to pay off your student loans by the time you're 70 profession.
Okay. Oh, got it.
and I started exploring elsewhere, and it kind of, in a fun, exciting way, fell into my lap. I was just hanging out with some of my engineer friends, and they had a startup that they were designing for those little digital screens at gas stations. It was the early years when these things were really not that common yet.
Interesting.
And they were like, hey, we need a proposal or design a presentation for this. You know, we heard about your presentations because I'd always cared about aesthetics. And I was like, sure, I can do that. So I did it for them. And then I did more. And they're like, business cards. And then they're like, hey, do you know how to do this? And over the period of time, you know, as their organization developed, I just kept rolling with them and doing sales and marketing, and they were like, hey, we need digital ads and we need all this stuff. And I just started figuring my way through it, and YouTube started becoming a thing around that time. Later into it, before it was all guesstimates before YouTube. And I just started learning. And then started making a career out of it, and then moved to a new organization, and eventually went back to school. I was like, you know what? I actually really enjoy this. I have a lot of fun doing this marketing, and a lot of my skill sets that I naturally have align with this, and finished my degree. And then, you know, went on to starting my own thing eventually.
Very cool. So yeah, talk a little bit more about what that journey was like with starting Odin Marketing House. You know, what was that deciding factor to start an agency?
Oh, not an easy one. So I'll tell the true story. I initially was working my way up through careers, and I got a job at Spectrum doing the digital marketing, and I did really well within my region, and they promoted me to a regional manager. I had a very large territory doing very well, but wasn't super transparent about salary. After the first several months, we moved down to the central, like it's called the Inland Empire, and we were struggling. We were every frozen vegetables and macaroni was our main course.
Oh no.
We did not anticipate, you know, $2,400 to $3,000 a month in rent.
Right.
So, you know, where we came from, that was, I think, quadruple our rent. So I was technically making less than I was when I was in my role, coordinator position.
Interesting. Right.
Because of expenses. And so we're struggling, and my wife was a copywriter.
Okay.
And that's how we actually met within the marketing world. And I was like, well, what do we have? And I was like, I always had a dream, even in my college, one of my courses was starting, or one of my projects was starting a local agency. I was like, well, my wife can do it. I can work, and she can, you know, we can create an agency. And then if it ever blows up, you know, I can, you know, potentially leave Spectrum. And she was struggling to find a job down here in the IE. And then she goes and just takes it away. And she had a design focus and copyright focus initially. I never conflicted the two, Spectrum, and never transferred any clients or anything like that. You know, was transparent with my boss, said, hey, you know, my wife is doing this. I may consult at night, but I'm not doing that on hours. You know, there's separation of church and state. He's like, no problem.
Right.
As time progresses, they have less and less of an okay with it. My wife gets happens to land completely separate services, but happens to land a client from Spectrum outside of my interference. And it basically it goes to the top, and they release me.
Oh,
yeah.
Interesting.
And I'm sitting there thinking that I was going to make a career out of working as a digital manager and potentially work my way to LA and all that. And I'm like, oh, shoot, what am I going to do?
Yeah.
And I had never been released like that before. And I'm looking at my wife and she's like, well, do you want to find another job? And I was like, no, I don't. And she's like, well, so you want to come on with the agency? And I was like, yeah. She's like, okay. So I come on with her and she hates it. She had designed the company, very aesthetics, lots of graphic design. And here I come in with a very analytical and marketing side. You know, we add the service in.
Yeah.
And it's a very different beast than a design agency.
Yes.
And she's not very happy. And then she comes to me one day and she's like, hey, we don't have the money to keep going. Like you have to make a choice. And I was like, okay. I literally put down on my computer a countdown timer of our savings. And even took out my retirement and put it in the account and drained the whole thing to pursue this. And she says, I'm going to take a step back. This was always really your dream. The company's named after what you wanted it. Like, this isn't my company. This is really like this your company. And, you know, you have till the savings run out. So I set the countdown timer. And literally the week before the countdown timer went off, I got the client that would just pay our bills. I finally landed the client. And from that moment, it only took every single year, it doubled the revenue every single year after that point. After about 6 months after that moment when we were actually able to pay our bills, still back to frozen foods again. Yeah. My wife looks at me and she's like, I'm really glad that you took this on. I'm glad that you're running things now, but this is so sucking. I was like, what? She's like, I've always hated marketing. And I was like, no, what do you mean? She's like, can you run this company yourself? And I'm like, yes. She's like, I want to do something else. Okay. I'm all on my own at that point. She moved on to bigger and greater things for herself. She does trauma-informed therapy and yoga and helps a lot of people. But it's been years since she hasn't done marketing and she's very happy for it. Yeah, I took the organization over and, you know, it just grew and grew and grew and grew. We do very little design now.
That is so funny.
I started off as a designer, but that's not where my expertise lies. So,
it's yeah,
more sales type orientation. But I always tell people I call it the blood debt, you know, that I had to pay something in to get something out. And although this wasn't the path that I initially set out for or desired, you know, I had to make a sacrifice because I didn't want to work for somebody else that just didn't like the look of what I did or what my wife did or how I lived or, you know, wanted me to work a specific way. You know, for 2 years that I worked as that manager, I was number one and number two salesperson for the whole year, and they still didn't get a sales increase or a pay increase. I was tired of working for someone and not being a dictator of my own income. If I got out there and worked really hard and got more sales, I should make more money.
Yes.
But that's not how it works when you work for someone else. Not always.
It's true. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Wow, that's a really, really cool, interesting story. That's, yeah, I love how you guys just kept going, you know, like it was, you know, initially it was your wife took over the business and then, you know, you were doing what you had to do to, you know, make the business succeed. So, yeah, such a cool story, very inspiring. And then, so, you know, you got the business off the ground, you know, you said you're doubling in revenue year over year, which is really, really cool. So how do you guys bring in leads now? Like, what does that sales strategy look like? How do you bring in those leads and then close those prospects?
Yeah. So the biggest way is, I don't know if anybody has like Ahrefs or ScreenFrog or any of those other softwares, but if you look at the cost per click for Google Ads, or if you look at the cost per acquisition on Facebook for marketing, it's pretty steep.
Yeah.
It's pretty steep. I think the lowest cost per click you can get on Google for our marketing industry is about $18 per click. So if you don't have a big revenue to put up, you're not going to succeed in digital advertising within our industry.
Yes.
So the majority of the focus that I put into is SEO, local SEO specifically. I noticed that within our agencies, and I took a lot of time in the early years looking at where the gaps were within my local agencies around me. And everybody is after these Fortune 500 companies, or, you know, near equivalents or soon to be Fortune 500 companies. Nobody was paying attention to the little guys. And I knew, being a starting business myself, my father being one, the risks and dangers that a lot of those early companies had. So I said, okay, how could I create a model where I can do enough of these small businesses, not charge them an arm and a leg, provide a good service, and get lots of them? And the only avenue that I could find is SEO and setting my pricing structure accordingly and trying to work on volume. So that's my initial marketing strategy. As I grow, I have gotten more, a few small or a lot of small businesses, some medium businesses, and a couple very, very large businesses. And it works for me. It's what I need. And SEO seems to be the prime area that, you know, if you put in the time and effort, you don't need a big ad budget. You know, there might be a few services here and there that might cost you $100, $200 periodically. But as a general rule, it's your time and effort. And you can see the results over time very dramatically, and they're compounding results. It's not, your results aren't going to be, only what you put in is what you get out. You know, what you put in compounds over time.
So, yeah.
That's been my main strategy.
Awesome. And then, you know, I'm sure you guys get referrals as well. So, you know, what is your key to maintaining happy clients who are, you know, hopefully going to bring in those referrals at the end of the day as well?
Yeah. So one of the big issues that I see a lot of agencies and a lot of the larger corporations do is very, very long contracts. I've done either very short contracts or minimal contracts for protection, but not contracts for duration. And that is something I think is very different. And I understand why a lot of agencies would choose not to select that, because they want to guarantee income. They want to show consistent revenue. I understand those desires, but it's also based on fear. I do not set those term limit contracts for the majority of my clients, because if they're not happy with me or I'm not happy with them, I would prefer that we part ways amicably. And also, you'd be surprised at how few negative Yelp reviews or Google reviews you'll get by not locking somebody into a contract that they don't want to be in anymore.
Yes.
And good point. Being a marketer, if you understand how Yelp reviews work, you're going to understand reviews are everything these days. Getting one review as an agency is a very challenging task, because it is not a very fun thing to go on and be like, oh, I'm so excited about my marketing agency, I'm going to go find them on Yelp and give them a Yelp review or a Google review. It's not, you have to really ask your clients in general, but you don't have to ask anybody to give you a negative review. They are going to hunt you out.
Yes. No, it's so true. So you guys are just, so do you make sure that you follow up with all of your customers then to be trying to get as many reviews as possible?
I do. Yeah. I'll be honest. I'm that stereotypical car mechanic who has the beat up van. you look at my social media, it's been a long time since I've posted. You know, my reviews, I go in batches. So every year I just make it a task in January.
Yeah.
Go through. You know, I'll get anywhere between, you know, one to maybe three reviews a year. You know, I don't get that many, but I'm consistent and I have it on my calendar. Go out, find, go to all your clients, ask them for reviews. And you just do that at the beginning of the year. And your clients who have had you last year, they see the pattern. And as you keep it going, I just recommend that if you're going to try to get reviews, just keep it consistent on when you do it and don't harass them, because the more you harass them, you know, the more it's begrudging and it's going to come out in the tone of the review.
Yes, of course. Yeah. It's hard to find that balance where, you know, you want to be getting those reviews, but you don't want to be, you know, overstepping and coming across as being pushy. So yeah, no, great point. I love that you just set that as a recurring task for yourself and then you're getting those reviews.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome.
My minimal reviews.
The consistency is key though.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I completely agree.
So what would you say has been the biggest overall challenge that you've had to overcome as you've been growing Odin Marketing House?
Well, after the initial hurdle, you know, that I think that's the hardest part, is going from, you know, just, I think if you're starting from scratch and you do not have any clients, that's always the challenging part, is finding your first initial clients.
Yeah.
I highly recommend, you know, college students, I'm guessing, are going to be, you know, listening to this and being in that position, or who want to start their agency, or maybe somebody who's working for someone else in a different industry or whatever. A great place to start is local chamber of commerces.
Yes.
I love our Upland Chamber of Commerce. They've been very welcoming to me. And, you know, with them, it's just like the reviews. You have to be consistent. You can't just show up once and expect that you're going to get sales. And you can't walk in there and say, I do this, do you want to meet? You know, you have to develop relationships. And I think that's a great way to understand it for online as well. You're developing relationships digitally if in your marketing. And once you learn how to do that in person as a salesperson, your digital advertising is going to become better as well, because you learn you're educating, you're informing, you're meeting, you're warming up, you're getting to know them, and then you can do the ask. Especially for larger purchase items, it's a longer sales cycle. So yeah, I'm a big believer, if you're starting off, definitely hitting the Chamber of Commerce's. My initial other hurdles, definitely learning the back end, you know, learning your, you know, what do you use a CRM, do you not, do we're setting up, you know, the proper email flows, do you you know, your, do you use PayPal, or do you you know, have the right checks, what system do you use? And it will be messy. And I think that's the thing that's difficult and was a big hurdle, is sorting out the mess. That's going to be my answer. You have to sort out the mess. So not every agency should look like another agency, and you're finding what works for you, for your style. Don't look at the big boys and say, I'm going to be exactly like them. What do they do? I'm going to do that. It doesn't always work that way. Find something that works within your personality style and then sort out that mess.
Right. And then like dial in those systems and processes and get like really, really super organized.
Correct. If email marketing is exciting and interesting to you, shoot for that. Do that. If you're, you know, really more of an in-person type of marketer, then focus on getting to physical events. You know, find the system that works within your personality style, rather than trying to force what everybody else does to fit your system.
Yeah, I love that. That's great advice. So where do you see Odin Marketing House in 5 years' time?
5 years' time? I have a very small staff. I have, some subcontractors. I think that's a really big advantage. Find people within your industry that you can partner with, because not everybody's going to want to do what you do. And it's, nice to partner with people. But I think I would have probably a few more employees, and probably a better general flow. I think that's more of my focus than it is finances, working out my individual flow of how I do business and having it be a more interactive and easy flow from, I don't know you to final purchase and ongoing reporting and everything like that. I think a lot of people are trying to do reporting first rather than doing good work, or trying to do a good presentation and letting that sacrifice their results to their current clients. And I would say, and this will go into my book recommendation, find where you can have the greatest leverage with the least amount of work. You don't need to do everything perfectly. You don't need to make it look like you are the biggest agency to get good results. You do need to make sure that it does results, but it doesn't have to be the prettiest looking thing.
That's great advice. I love that. It's true, and there's also those services that are more profitable than others as well, that are really, really important to just dial in and figure out what services are you going to be able to deliver the most bang for your buck that don't take up a ton of your time.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Very cool. So we are now going to move on to the fast five. So I have five rapid fire questions for you.
Okay.
First question, what's a book you've read that's made an impact on you?
80-20 Sales and Marketing. I cannot recommend that book enough. And like I mentioned before, it's about finding that leverage. You're not always trying to, the book really goes into how you find this in nature. We're always looking for the advantage. And if you can find where that advantage is for you, don't micro focus on everything. Like a great example for websites that he refers to is find the page. There's always going to be one page on your website based off of analytics that does the most traction. Mm-hmm. Focus in on that page and make that page perfect. Don't go into 100 pages and try to make sure everyone's good, because you're dividing your effort.
Yeah.
If you spent only one time on one page and the rest of your pages were just white backgrounds with text, you'd still make the same amount of sales.
Yeah. So just making sure those 80% of the results are coming from 20% of the effort.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yes. So phenomenal book.
I've never read the book, but my business partner is obsessed with the 80-20 rule. And he's grilled me so many times about the 80-20 rule that now it's just second nature. Everything I'm doing, I'm like, is this the 80-20? And it's such a great way to just be so efficient. Once you start looking at that through the lens of like everything you're doing, is this the 80-20 of what I'm focusing on?
It comes out in weird ways, and it can look lazy to a lot of people. Like a great example is I have a very, very pretty and nice presentation. And if someone requests it of me, I can absolutely produce it. But most of the time, the client's not looking for every single one of those details. And many times those details add more questions and longer meetings. Sometimes I just send an email. Hey, here's the services I'm proposing for you in the stages. Here's the price. And just send. You'd be surprised how often that works better than a 10-page, really well-designed proposal. And I've done this for very, very big organizations. And that's an example. Or reporting is another example. People will shoot out indexed reports for their ads when sometimes it's just an answer on a phone call. If you think about the duration it takes to put that proposal together, check everything, go through it. You've already been through the numbers. You're just trying to make it presentable to the client. Sometimes it's just a phone conversation.
Yeah.
Not every client's going to accept that. Some clients do require deeper reporting, but not all of them.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so interesting. And I love that strategy. I think it's such a great way to just optimize your time. And yeah, it just makes sense. I should read the book.
It's a great book.
Awesome. And then what does your morning routine look like?
Oh, you know, I think this is a part where a lot of people, they're going to look at marketing CEOs and owners and they're like, oh, they must get up and do yoga and, you know, meditate and then write in the journal and all that stuff. I do not. I get up, I go straight to make a cup of coffee. I get right to work. I always have a task list. You know, I have a key system on my notes, where I go through my emails, prioritize everything. I wake up later than probably most people think a business owner should. I prioritize, I drink my cup of coffee, and I get right to work. Mm-hmm. I start with answering emails, and then, you know, I prioritize my tasks, and I do it in order of N. And then I have a star system. So N means, can I do it in 15 minutes or faster? That gets done immediately, no matter what the task is. Mm-hmm. If it's an email, if it's a quick edit on whatever, if it's a 15 minute task or under, it gets done now.
Interesting.
Then I start with the highest priority. And then from there, priority going down. And the reason I do that is I watched a TED talk on productivity a long time ago, and they were looking at computer algorithms and how they process information. Mm-hmm. And they thought, obviously, you start with the biggest files first, and you complete those, and then you work your way down to the smallest files. And they found they actually back things up. So they're like, okay, we'll do the fastest things first. And they did the fastest things, and the bigger things just got bigger. We're like, well, how do we solve this problem? And they started doing with the smallest tasks first, immediately, the ones, you know, they set a parameter of under, you know, 15 minutes in mm-hmm. digital world, mm-hmm. and then started immediately on the big files. And they found that was the fastest for processing the most amount of information.
I like that.
You go through decision fatigue and you have to account for that. So, you know, by doing this system, I've learned, you know, I can do about 12 tasks in a day, including large tasks. And I have to decide what those 12 tasks are, mm-hmm. or else I'm going to become fatigued and not be able to be, optimal.
Yeah. And another thing, so it can be really daunting when you have this massive to-do list as well. And I know I get really energized by checking things off my to-do list. So when you, mm-hmm. you know, you get that momentum and you start, you know, checking things off the to-do list, and then you're moving to the bigger tasks, at that point you feel really accomplished and you almost have more energy to approach that task as well.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I was flipping through my notebook and lost my notes. There we go.
All right. And then, so is there a CEO that you follow or study?
Alex Hrnosi. I don't know if I'm pronouncing his last name correctly.
Oh, yes. I follow him too. Yeah.
I love his content. And him and his wife started off very similar to me and my wife. And that's why, you know, he has a lot of relationship advice for working with another entrepreneurial partner that I really appreciate. But he's it's the same thing. Like, he got to the dollar amount, he talks about, you know, selling his first business, and then he's like, what now? You know, so he has, as far as like an entrepreneur, he is a good marketer. Mm-hmm. That is not his focus. But if you were looking for just general knowledge and advice, here he's a very down to earth no fluff, no cold bath in the morning and yoga and all that kind of guy. He's not that guy.
He
wears flannel and cut off jeans, you know,
but yeah.
He's a millionaire, you know, and he's very, very successful. So I really like him.
I really like him as well. I follow him on Facebook and Instagram, and he's got a ton of content, and it's amazing actually in like these little snippets, like how valuable the content is that he puts out there.
Yeah.
And with sales specifically, he has a ton of content around sales. If you're interested in upping your sales game, definitely follow him.
Yes.
Alex Hormozi. Yeah. Awesome. And then, so what is your favorite online tool?
I just got put on by a buddy of mine who owns Campfire Marketing. He uses a software that we found. It's called Walaxy, two A's. And it's got kind of a sci-fi theme to it. And it seems like it's corny, but it's actually if you're trying to do B2B sales, it is probably the most phenomenal tool you can use. And I really debated on whether sharing it because it, you know, I don't know how many listeners you have. And I didn't want to, I wanted to keep this as a secret, but it is an amazing product. So essentially what it does is you connect a LinkedIn profile and you can use it for clients or yourself. It will create a workflow and I've used workflow systems before and they're generally lacking in something or they're too complicated or, you know, you have to make sure every little thing, and it's very easy. It's beyond easy. And it'll find the proper people, import them into the system, find out if they have an email. It will set delays on first visiting the person's page, waiting a day, at requesting approval, waiting a day. Then it will shoot them a text or a message on LinkedIn. If they do not, it'll do and or workflows. And it can do an email, it can do a text. It does basically everything but phone calls. And it will... it'll just create your workflow for you. My favorite workflow you can check out on there is a paid one, is called StarTrack. And it's not a very expensive system as well. So I highly recommend Walaxy.
Okay, very cool. Yeah, that sounds like a very cool program. And last question, what's one thing you wish you had known when you began your career?
My total marketing career?
Yes.
Okay. You know, I don't know the answer to that, except for what I wish I knew ahead of time. There's so many things. You know, I guess the 80-20 would probably be the big one, going back to that. I don't mean to re-harp on that one and reuse an answer, but I think that one and, oh no, I know the perfect one. Know when to say no.
That's a good one. Yes.
That when you're in the early stages, I get the feeling why people are going to haggle you and your prices are probably really low and you're going to just accept pretty much whatever comes your way. And that's fine to get experience. But once you have the experience, learn to say no. It's okay to say no to a client and say, hey, you know what? This isn't working out. And many times I'll encounter other marketers who are just starting and I'll ask them like, hey, are you accepting referrals? And it creates goodwill. And, you know, maybe down the line, if somebody's starting off and you encounter them, you know, you can say, hey, you know, this isn't a good client for me, but it might be a good client for you. And you can hand that client off as a referral. They don't feel like you left them high and dry and, you know, you didn't have to take on somebody that you knew wasn't going to be able to afford your services. Or if somebody seems like they are going to be a difficult client, I don't believe that clients are always right. Sometimes, you know, I encounter somebody and I'm like, you are going to be a very difficult client. I'm going to have to say no to you because you're going to be three times the work for half the cost.
Exactly. That's a really great tip. I love that. And Yeah. So thank you so much for joining us today, Josiah. It was a real pleasure to have you on the podcast. I love learning about your story and how you've grown Odin Marketing House. So thank you again for joining me.
Of course. Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Agency Toolkit. We hope you've learned something new that you can implement into your agency today. If you liked this episode, please subscribe to our podcast, and we'll see you next time.